Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Tuition hikes at the 10-campus UC system are making national headlines again. In November, the UC Regents voted 14-7 to raise tuition by 5% each year over the next 5 years, unless state funding is increased by $120 million. Every politician on the board, including Governor Jerry Brown, voted no. University of California students are paying three times more for tuition today than they paid in 1992. It costs just over $12,000 to attend a UC today, and that does not include things like books and housing. If these latest tuition hikes are adopted, students will have to come up with another $3,000 by 2019. In total, the UC has a $27 billion yearly budget that was just approved in November by the Regents. So how is that money actually spent? Critics say it's very difficult to get basic information. Last month, California Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins, who also serves on the governing board of the UC, proposed public hearings to scrutinize the budget line by line. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about what it will take to get the UC system to provide information about its finances and what role can students, parents, faculty, and the public play when it comes to this issue and tuition hikes. Students are constantly protesting tuition hikes, and university doctors just this week have walked off the job for the very first time to protest what they call unfair labor practices and lack of access to financial information from UC. Joining us to talk about this today is Chris Newfield, professor of literature and American studies at UC Santa Barbara and author of the book Unmaking the Public University, the 40-year assault on the middle class. Chris is former chair of the UC System-wide Senate Committee for Planning and Budget, and he joins us from Santa Barbara. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. It's great to be with you.
It's great to have you. Dan Walters is a veteran journalist and columnist. He covers California politics for the Sacramento Bee, and he's been writing columns about the tuition hikes and the budget. Hi, Dan. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you. And Kevin Sabo is a board chair of the UC Student Association. He's a political science major at UC Berkeley and has been trying to get information about the budget. And Kevin joins me in studio. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, Rose.
Thank you for coming in.
Yep.
So we invited UC President Janet Napolitano, UC Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer Nathan Brostrom, and UC Provost and Executive VP Amy Doerr to join the show. They all declined. We did get a statement from the UC Office of the President, which I will read throughout the show. First off, Dan, the UC's annual budget is $27 billion. I bet a lot of people don't know that. And when I first saw it, I just wanted to triple check because it seems like such a high number.
It is a high number, but you have to put it in context. I think, as I recall, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, it's the so-called core budget. That's the actual budget for instructing students, and is there something, maybe a quarter of that. The rest of it is research grants and all sorts of other things that go on. But I think in the discussions that they talked about the core budget being $6 billion, but it's still a substantial amount of money, which also illustrates that the battle between Governor Brown and the system, the UC system, over tuition and money doesn't involve very much money. It only involves about $100 million, which is pocket lint in connection to the UC budget and even less in relationship to the state budget. So this is really not a battle over money. It's over a battle of operational differences, control, turf, all these other things rather than just money.
Hmm. All right, so elaborate on that a bit. And just to give people some background, in November, the UC Regents voted 14-7 to raise tuition by 5% each year over the next 5 years, unless the state increases funding by $120 million. Is that right, Dan?
Yes, I think that is about right. It's $100 million.
Okay.
Or a little over $100 million. I thought you were talking to someone else.
Okay.
And
so,
It's really not very much money. It's really, truly, it's in the world of budgeting, it's a minor point, something where to the right of the decimal point. I mean, it's within the margin of error. it's just not very much money.
Well, I'm sure. Would you say, Kevin, to students who are struggling to pay tuition, is it a lot
Absolutely.
Of money?
Absolutely. I mean, and this is something that we've raised with President Napolitano time and time again. You know, she's a very big fan of the phrase, it's just the numbers. But you know, in terms of the 5% increase, I think it would raise it from almost 13,000 to about 15,000 a year. And, you know, to students who are, you know, especially in you know, I go to Berkeley, where we're in the Bay Area, where rent, you know, I frequently joke with my friends how we pay $750 on average a month for a Harry Potter broom closet, you know, in the city of Berkeley. And so it, in the grand scheme of things, it certainly doesn't seem like a lot. But to students and to middle-class families who are getting squeezed, like, it is a lot. It's a lot of money.
Chris, what are you hearing from your students just about these tuition hikes at UC Santa Barbara?
Well, I think Kevin's right. They are really a hardship. We have the same kind of housing costs and housing overcrowding that Kevin just described. The other thing that I just wanted to throw in around the budget so that listeners are clear about how important the state is to public education. If you look at the core budget that Dan mentioned, which is only about a quarter of the total, that's the amount of money that is spent on campuses for teaching and research, you know, the sort of the core mission of the university. The state is still paying close to half of that, you know, 45-46%. And basically, almost all the rest of that comes out of students' pockets and their families' pockets. So it's these cuts and then the attempt to restore the cuts make a huge difference in what actually happens in the classroom and what happens in the library and what happens in the laboratory.
So what is your analysis of this? I mean, Dan says at the end of the day, this tuition hike is really not about money because it's $120 million, which is peanuts compared to the core budget of $6 billion. Every politician on the board, including Governor Jerry Brown, voted against these hikes. It was a 14-7 vote. Why do you think this is happening? Now, we're hearing in the media, they're using this word clash, that Governor Jerry Brown is clashing with UC President Janet Napolitano. Chris, what do you think explains this?
Well, you know, Dan and Kevin know more than I do about Sacramento. It seems to me like a power struggle between them.
Absolutely.
Who is going to define the university and whether the university has autonomy in defining the educational mission for its teaching and research. I think there's a lot of that going on. Dan's totally right that $100 million is not the real issue. You know, the state contribution is closer to $3 billion if the university had grown along with the state and the state's income for the last 15 years, the general fund would be closer to $5 billion. So really the policy of the university for the last 15 years has been defined by the struggle to fill gaps rather than by the struggle to satisfy the state's needs for the current and the future generation. It's put us on the defensive, and it's really reduced the quality of what we can offer the state's population.
Dan, what are your thoughts on the politics involved here? I understand that Janet Napolitano and Governor Brown are going to be meeting, just the two of them, over the next couple of months, and these meetings are going to be private. The media aren't even going to be allowed to find out what they're talking about.
That's true of much of what goes on in politics, particularly when it comes to money. It's actually the fact that they are going to have a two-member committee in this of the Board of Regents, because it is a victory for the governor. It means that the regents really don't want to go eyeball to eyeball with him over this issue. So by getting that done, it really is the university backtracking a little bit. But I think that the more important thing, two more important points. Number one, yes, the university's share of the state budget has fallen, but you have to put that in the context of where the money has gone over that period. It's gone into prisons, for one thing. It's gone in, but most of it, it's gone into K-12 education. K-12 education commands an ever larger share of the state budget because the education community went to the voters in 1988 and got Proposition 98 passed. And Proposition 98, which is part of the state constitution, dictates how much money K-12 education should get. And this year alone, it means that every single extra dollar that comes in revenue has to go to K-12 education under that law. So even if the governor and the legislature wanted to give the university or health and welfare programs or any other segment of the state budget more money, they would have to take it from somebody, and they could not take it from the schools. So you have to look upon the state budget essentially as a zero-sum game. In a given year, there's only so much money to be allocated, and a lot of it is dictated by the Constitution, particularly the K-12 portion of it, and the community colleges are also part of that. So when you start divvying up the money, you have to divvy up only that which is left over after you've done everything else. And the university systems and the state college system, state college university system for that matter, there is no constitutional guarantee of their financing as the K-12 and community colleges have. And so when the squeeze comes, they are the ones, among others, who get squeezed, but particularly higher education. It's a zero-sum game. It's like squeezing a tube of toothpaste. You squeeze on one end, it comes out someplace else, and that's exactly what happens in this case. The second point is that the university is constitutionally independent, and in a way that's to its detriment. Because it is independent, then the state doesn't feel the same responsibility towards it that it does towards what it owns, its own programs, as it were. Nor are the university's finances particularly transparent. Yes, they're there, but you have to be a very experienced budget reader to understand where the money goes. And so it kind of escapes the scrutiny of the politicians in Sacramento. All they see it is a number, in this case, as I said, about $3 billion. We give them $3 billion. We don't know how they spend that money, and we have no control over how they spend it. So why should we pay any attention to them? They want to be independent? Well, let them be independent then, essentially. That's the attitude.
So as a veteran journalist, Dan, talk about the process involved, the experiences you've had in trying to get information about the UC budget.
You can get the numbers. What you can't get is the context, because the university does not get the same kind of analysis that other segments of the state budget do. The legislature has a office called the Legislative Analyst Office. They go into great detail on every scintilla of the state budget that's under the control of the legislature. But since the University of California is not under the control of the legislature, they basically have no reason to look into it and don't look into it. Nobody does independent analysis. Nobody in government, at least, does independent analysis of the university's budget. It's a big black hole that nobody really knows anything about. And as long as the university wants to remain independent, then the attitude of the state is, okay, we'll give them whatever money we can give them and let them go fly on their own.
Again, we did invite a number of UC President Janet Napolitano, UC Executive VP and Chief Financial Officer Nathan Brostrom, and UC Executive VP Amy Doerr to join the show. They all declined, but we did get a statement from the UC Office of the President. It says, UC has and continues to publicly and transparently report annual expenditures for educating its students. These calculations, known as the average expenditures for instruction, have been in place for more than 15 years. Kevin, what's your response to that? Because as a student at UC Berkeley, I understand you've tried to get information on the budget.
Yeah, so I've reached out several times to the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Regents, and, you know, even like in citing the California Public Records Act, and it's just been, you know, one of the labors of Hercules to try to get any information out of them. You know, when they eventually respond, you know, the first thing they point out is, while the Public Records Act does say that the requester is responsible for the cost of production, I mean, this is the 21st century. It's 2015. This is the University of California. We have a budget we now know of $27 billion. Why are things as simple and arcane as the Regents' minutes? Why is that something that the public has to go out of their way to pay to get to be able to view and look through? So it's definitely been a daunting task. I'm not surprised that a number of people from UCOP have declined to come on and to defend, you know, their expenditures and the lack of transparency. And the phrase black hole has certainly been used often enough to describe the UC's budget. But, you know, when we had our board meeting at UC San Diego, the former vice president of budget and capital resources, Patrick Lenz, came and gave a presentation on the UC budget. And it was the same recycled pie charts and the same talking points, you know, that's on the UC's website. It was nothing new. It was nothing revealing. You know, there are a lot of these myths that they try to disprove through their frequently asked questions on their website. And it just, like, it doesn't tell a full story. There are millions and millions and millions of dollars in the UC's budget that is totally unaccounted for in discretionary spending or in these discretionary funds. And whenever individuals who are more experienced, you know, who have had more experience interacting with UC's budget, they always tell us, look at the discretionary spending. It's totally unaccounted for. It's not something that the UC is very public about. And you know, it's interesting that when it comes to the governor's budget proposal for the community colleges, which I'm a transfer student from, every single penny is earmarked for, you know, this will go towards counseling, this will go towards, you know, this program, this will go towards degrees. It's ridiculous how you compare that to an institution that takes an even supposedly larger role in society and the research and the mission that it has, and it's totally unaccountable. And I think it does go back to that the legislature sort of feels the need to abdicate the responsibility, because it's like, you want to be your own institution, you're very proud of your constitutional autonomy, then why are we going to invest more of the tax dollars in your institution?
Dan, what about California Assembly Speaker Toni Atkins, who serves on the governing board of the UC? She's got a seat on the UC Board of Regents, and I understand she's one of the two most powerful members of a legislature which controls the flow of money to UC, and she recently proposed public hearings to scrutinize UC's budget line by line. Do you think this will go anywhere?
It probably won't, because the university will assert its constitutional independence. They don't have to do it, and they're not likely to do it. You have to look at this as two sides of the same coin. One side is independence from the state's oversight. The other side is dependence on the state for money. And you cannot really, in many ways, reconcile those two coins, particularly in an era when there are not unlimited funds to go around to everybody who wants them. And so the university, if the university wants more money, it's going to have to subject itself to more scrutiny, but it does not want to subject itself to more scrutiny. It just wants the money. And that's the nut of the whole conflict. And the governor is saying it's enough. This is not a new conflict. This conflict has been going on as long as I've been around the Capitol, and that's been 40 years. Mm. 40 years, and as long as Jerry Brown's been around. I can recall many, many legislative hearings. I can recall when they've tried to put stuff in the budget, directing the university to do this, that, and the other, and the university just ignores them. And so that's the question. How independent is this university? If it's independent, then it's on its own, basically. And the state doesn't have any responsibility for it. If it's not independent, if it has to be dealt with like any other section of the state budget and scrutinized and analyzed and everything else, that means the university is going to have to give up some of its autonomy. You can't have both things, and this is what this is all about. And Jerry Brown saying, I am going to assert more control over how the university conducts itself, and the university is saying, no, you're not, just give us the money.
That is Dan Walters, veteran journalist and columnist who covers California politics for the Sacramento Bee. He's been writing about tuition hikes and the UC budget. Kevin Sabo is board chair of the UC Student Association, political science major at UC Berkeley, and he's been trying to get information about the budget. Chris Newfield is professor of literature and American studies at UC Santa Barbara and author of Unmaking the Public University, the 40-year assault on the middle class. Chris is former chair of the UC system-wide Senate Committee for Planning and Budget. We invited UC President Janet Napolitano, UC Chief Financial Officer Nathan Brostrom, and UC Executive VP Amy Doerr to join today's show, but they all declined. Today we are talking about tuition hikes at the 10-campus UC system and the UC budget. Overall, $27 billion yearly budget. The core budget is $6 billion. The state provides about $2.8 billion. So what questions do you have about the UC budget and its finances? If you work in the UC system, if you're a student, if you're connected, or you care about higher education in California, what are your thoughts on these issues, these ongoing tuition hikes, and now what people are calling a clash between Governor Jerry Brown, who opposes the latest hikes, and UC President Janet Napolitano, who supports them? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Chris, you're the former chair of the UC System-wide Senate Committee for Planning and Budget. If the budget process were to be more transparent, what kind of information specifically would you like to get your hands on?
There is quite a bit of information provided by the university. I don't think it's as depressing and hopeless as Kevin and Dan were saying. If you go to accountability.universityofcalifornia.edu, you'll find an accountability report for each of the previous years, and you can get quite a bit of information about expenditures there. There's also the financial schedules that you can get off the UCOP website for people that are interested in more detail. That said, and I should also add that I have a blog that I've been running for years called Remaking the University that provides quite a bit of budgetary analysis for people that are interested in the finer-grained issues. Some of those issues are how much money is being spent on teaching versus research. I mean, this is an issue that has gone back decades in terms of, you know, sort of its politicization. The university is afraid that if the state understands that it spends quite a bit of money doing research rather than just teaching, the state will cut that. In other words, that the state is only interested in instructing undergraduates and not in the rest of the mission of a research university. This has made the university, you know, reluctant to make, you know, judgments about how faculty spend their time and releasing the results. But people have made estimates about cost of research versus the cost of instruction. Charles Schwartz is one person that has done this, estimating that costs or the amount of money spent on undergraduates is closer to $6,000 than to $20,000, which is what the university takes in terms of both tuition and state money. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. But that's a key question that will get at a couple of issues. What kind of funding do undergraduates need to get the quality of education that they expect from the University of California and from the Cal State system and from the CCCs? And then secondly, how much money does the state need to invest in order to get the research results that a research university is supposed to provide?
The Daily Bruin, UCLA, had a piece by Michael Hirschman, and he says, according to data from the UCLA's Higher Education Research Institute, last year 45% of faculty devoted 9 or more hours a week, approximately a quarter of their time, to scheduled teaching. That is down from 56% in 2001 and 63% in 91. So 63% in 1991 and 45% today. Chris, make sense of that. What does that really mean?
I don't think it's true.
You don't?
No.
You think it's more or less?
I think that it depends on the discipline. Most professors in my area, in the social sciences and the humanities, spend more than half their time on instruction. There's hours in the classroom, double that in order to get hours of preparation. There's student feedback and assistance. There's keeping current in the profession just on the topic that you're teaching. And then the rest of it is research activity, which is, you know, part of our obligation to our profession and to the state. And there's also public service and faculty-based administration that goes into that. The key number for me is the number of hours that professors work for the state. We essentially work 1.5 weeks per week for salaries, meaning that the average work week in time studies is around 65 hours, and that includes the whole range of faculty, including some that are less research active than others.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and Kevin, I'll get you to respond right after the break. Chris Neufeld is professor of Literature and American Studies at UC Santa Barbara. Kevin Sabo is a student at UC Berkeley. Dan Walters writes for the Sacramento Bee. And today we are talking about the UC budget. The core budget is $6 billion. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective or opinion that you've not yet heard in today's discussion or a question you think needs to be answered, please join our conversation by calling 866-798-8255. It's toll-free, 866-798-TALK, T-A-L-K. Or you can send your email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. At noon, it's Bina. There's voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. This week, Amanda Palmer in conversation with Armistead Maupin. And then at 1 o'clock this afternoon, it's David LaTulipe and Open Air.
I'm
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll discuss media coverage of Jeffrey Sterling. He's the CIA whistleblower who was convicted of espionage just this week for giving the New York Times' James Risen classified information about Iran's nuclear program. This isn't getting much media attention. We'll talk about it tomorrow with Harper's Scott Horton, and then we'll also talk about the historic election in Greece and the rise of the anti-austerity party Syriza. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the budget at the UC system, 10-campus UC system. The overall budget is $27 billion a year. The core budget is $6 billion. The state of California provides $2.8 billion. In November, the UC Regents voted 14-7 to raise tuition by 5% every year over the next 5 years, unless the state can come up with $120 million. So we're talking about this today and the power play between Governor Jerry Brown, who opposes the latest hike, and UC President Janet Napolitano, who supports it. We're talking about it with Chris Neufeld, President of Literature and American Studies at UC Santa Barbara. Dan Walters is a journalist with the Sacramento Bee, and Kevin Sabo is a board chair of the UC Student Association and political science major at UC Berkeley. And Kevin, before we get to calls and emails, you wanted to jump in about teacher time, how much time teachers actually spend in the classroom.
Right. So in the Daily Bruin article that you mentioned, Michael Hirschman is the president of the UCLA Graduate Student Association. I don't think that he would cite statistics in an article without, you know, legitimate sources, and I don't think the Daily Bruin would have let him run that statistic without citing it. So I think that there needs to be a lot of attention given to the number of hours that teachers are teaching. I know that in a lot of reports, there certainly has been the indication that teachers are teaching less, there are less teaching hours, and a lot of part-time or non-professor or tenured positions like lecturers and folks in those positions are taking on a greater and greater role, and they don't have access to the same level of benefits and the same higher salaries. And I know a lot of our graduate students in the UC Student Association have had a lot of concerns with diversity, with the ability to find jobs afterwards. So I certainly think that there's a lot more to look into it. I don't think that, you know, Michael Hirschman pulled those figures out of the great blue sky, but
how does this affect the quality of your education, and what are you hearing from fellow students?
Well, you know, a lot of students are, you know, finding it difficult to get classes still. There are students who are waitlisted, you know, for days and days and days, which affects your financial aid. If you're not fully enrolled by the beginning of the semester, you can't get your financial aid fully distributed to you until you're fully enrolled. And when you're on the waitlist, it doesn't count. And so there are fewer... When there are fewer teachers teaching, when there are fewer class sections available, students aren't able to get fully enrolled in these classes, which affects the time to degree completion. And we know that the governor is very interested in the time to degree completion because part of the plan that he has is reducing that time for the CSU as well. He makes no mention of it in the UCs.
Chris, you wrote a piece for Inside Higher Ed recently, and you quoted Caitlin Quinn, a student government leader.
My boss.
Oh, your boss, okay, at UC Berkeley. And she said, quote, "We're in huge classes. I've been here for 3 years and have been struggling to see the value of a UC education. I've been in classes as big as 800 people. I don't think there's more than one or two professors who know me by name," end quote. Can you talk about that, Chris?
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, I completely agree with what Kevin just said about this as a problem. And I think faculty and staff are as opposed to this drift towards huge classes and lack of personal attention as the students are. We're completely united about this. The problem is that it's very hard to sustain and upgrade public educational quality when we're under the kind of financial pressure that we've been under for really for 20 years, not just since 2008.
Well, how is the financial pressure affecting you and fellow professors? We've done shows about this in the past.
There's fewer smaller TA budget, more difficulty in hiring regular faculty, more difficulty in offering a large number of small courses. What's happened on some campuses is the problem sets. If there's three questions, there's only enough budget to grade one of the three. If a department, say economics, had a series of large lower division lectures and then some capstone courses where seniors could work with individual faculty members on problems, you know, sort of in the active learning sense of formulating their own research question than working one-on-one with a or in small groups. Those courses have been eliminated so that students are basically taking 4 years of large lectures rather than forming, you know, smaller groups where learning is more intense and more advanced. Or essentially, there's a tendency to dumb down the bachelor's degree through budget cuts, and that's what all of us want, to stop and reverse.
Dumb down the bachelor's degree?
Yeah, we aren't able to offer the intensive, individualized training that students at private universities get. Mm. And we're in danger of creating a new tier in our higher education system where great public research universities like UCLA, like Berkeley, like UC Santa Barbara are going to be second-tiered after a period of decades in which they were really offering something very similar to what students at Stanford and Harvard were getting. And I don't think there's anybody in the state of California voted for that.
Hmm. Well, we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from Ron in Palo Alto. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a question, sort of a follow-up question, regarding the research that's being done at the UC system. What amount of revenue does the UC system derive from its intellectual property possessions or the intellectual property that the UC system holds?
Who has information on that?
It's Chris.
Chris.
I can take that.
Okay, great.
It's usually the royalty stream from intellectual property is in single digits as a percentage of overall research expenditures. That's not too boring a way of putting it. It's usually the net royalties are in the tens of millions for a system that has about somewhere between 3 and 4 billion in contracts and grants every year. So it's not a significant number.
All right. Thank you for calling, Ron. Let's go next to Eric in Santa Cruz. Hi, Eric.
Thank you for taking my call. One point that always gets skipped over that I think is really important is the cost that the university charges for housing on campus. And in Santa Cruz, at UC Santa Cruz, we have a very expensive housing market anyway, but the charges for the dorms are simply outrageous. Yep. People are paying more than $1,000 per person per month to live in a triple dorm room, you know, that doesn't have really cramped. And what the university does is they don't get any state subsidies, so they overcharge for housing, and then they cook the books, and they'll do things where they'll transfer some of the housing money to non-housing items, such as they'll have highs and lows of occupancy, and when there are lows, they'll convert some dorms to non-residential uses. But the larger point is that this is a significant cost to the students. But because the state doesn't contribute to it directly, it gets passed over when people are talking about how expensive it is. And I really think it needs to be central to the discussion. What happens in Santa Cruz is they require all the freshmen to live on campus, and then almost all of them move off campus into town, and it creates problems for the community. Hmm. But they do that in large part because housing on campus is so expensive, even though Santa Cruz itself is one of the highest, you know, most expensive places to live in the country. It still is so much cheaper than the university for better quality. You know, you get a nice room in a nice house, your own room, bathroom, kitchen, and all that,
right,
for like half or less than what you would pay to live on campus.
Right. Well, thank you for calling in, Eric. Do you want to take that one, Kevin?
Yeah. I mean, this is something that we hear from our constituents at UC Santa Cruz all the time, that, you know, we're always weary when we hear political leaders talk about expanding numbers of seats at campuses, when they say across the system. And there are certain campuses that just can't you know, take it. And UC Santa Cruz, there are students who are homeless. There are students who are living in people's, you know, living rooms and doubling up in living rooms. There's just not enough housing. The Berkeley City Council this week even called out UC Berkeley for not providing enough housing or enough affordable housing for students. It's just something that the UC has definitely failed in regards to students and providing for that housing. And it's quite frankly, irresponsible when you say we have X number of seats, but without looking at, you know, some type of strategic plan as it relates to housing and making sure that not only is this housing available, but it's affordable and not taking advantage of the scarcity and the desperation of students to jack up those prices and to make a fortune off that.
You talked about homeless students. There's also food pantries on college campuses. Yeah. I was at Berkeley about a couple months ago and just ran into this room, and they were offering various boxed foods for kids who can't afford to eat.
Food insecurity is a huge issue in the UC, and unfortunately it's taken a lot of the student governments to pick up the slack that the university, you know, those meal plans where you buy the meal points, those are expensive. And so we in student government have had to pick up the slack of the university in providing free food for students and, you know, these type of pantries so that students can access those.
So, Dan, what else do we need to know about the budget? Because there's out-of-state tuition, which is really high and going to get higher, and then there's charitable giving. And the Chronicle of Higher Education just came out with some new numbers looking at charitable giving to 1,500 colleges during the 2014 fiscal year. And we often hear that UCs are competing with the Ivy League schools of the East Coast. And apparently UC just broke some records, according to the Chronicle of Higher Education, bringing in almost $1.8 billion, Harvard bringing in $1.1 billion. So this is a lot of money that they're getting from,
and where's it going?
From charities. Dan, what can you tell us about that?
Well, they do. UC gets a lot of money in bequests, but obviously it's not enough to cut their costs. And I want to say, listening to all this makes me very happy that my daughter went through this UC Berkeley in the 1980s.
Go Bears.
When it cost totally, this is going to shock people, it cost the total cost for tuition, room, board, books, ancillary expenses, everything was about $8,000 a year.
Everything.
Everything.
Wow.
And so I like I say, I'm glad they went through them. Look, there's another aspect to all this, and the talk about the food and the housing is that one of the way in which the university makes itself a kind of a political pariah in many cases is by paying these enormous salaries to their administrators and their coaches, for that matter. The contrast between those kinds of salaries and the average person, much less the average student, just grates on people. I mean, they're paying far more than anybody is paying in other branches of state government, and it just irritates the hell out of people, both in politics and in the general public. The university comes across as being arrogant,
yes,
and insular. And if you're in a political context, they're acting as if they are Harvard rather than being an arm of the state government, and that just really grates on people in Sacramento, outside of Sacramento, everybody, when you combine it with the kind of difficulty of getting information, this kind of arrogant, we know best, leave us alone, just give us money attitude. The university is essentially its own worst enemy in many cases.
Well, George Skelton with the LA Times wrote about this. And when you talk about salaries, the argument is always, well, if we don't pay these people hundreds of thousands of dollars, they all go work for the private sector. He points out that 2 months ago, the UC Regents gave pay hikes of up to 20% to the leaders of the Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, Merced, and Riverside campuses and awarded the new Irvine chancellor 24% more than his predecessor. So these are salaries ranging from $383,000 a year to $485,000 a year plus perks. George Skelton from the LA Times also notes that last year, UC Davis, for example, hired a PR person at a $260,000 annual salary. So Governor Brown makes about $177,000 a year. President Obama makes the UC president makes $570,000 a year. President Obama makes $400,000 a year. Dan, how do you make sense of this?
Well, you can't make sense of it. The average person just can't relate to it. They say, what's going on here? Why should they need more of our money? Why should they be socking students and their families for more money when they're paying these kinds of what appear to be outrageous salaries? I know about this PR person at UC Davis. That's ridiculous that you pay a quarter of $1 million a year. That's the sort of thing that General Motors might pay for their flak, not the University of California out of basically, indirectly anyway, taxpayers' money. It's really ludicrous, and it just, and let me tell you why it happens personally. the Board of Regents, with the exception of the people who are the political appointees, like the Speaker and the Governor, are they're wealthy corporate executives for the most part. So when the university says we need to pay $250,000 for a flak at UC Davis, they don't blink. They don't blink at all because, well, I would pay that in my big corporation that I own, people like Richard Blum, who's Dianne Feinstein's husband. So they don't blink at that at all. They have no, they just don't get it that they are the one percenters and that they're trying to make other people in the university one percenters and how much that just grates on people when they read about it. And, you know, this is an old thing for Jerry Brown. I can recall during his first stint as governor 40 years ago, he said university professors should be more content with psychic income, saying they shouldn't be seeking a lot more money. They should take joy in the fact that they have the privilege of teaching and so forth. Now, that didn't go over too well with the university.
That doesn't pay bills.
but I think it could be easily applied to the highly paid university administrators that why should we have to pay them the kind of money that they might be getting on Wall Street or in General Motors or in or maybe at Harvard, which has this enormous endowment fund? Why should a public university feel it has to do that? Is there that much difference in the quality of people, or is this just a matter of bootstrapping? Okay, this guy's getting paid so much, so I should get this paid much, and that guy said, well, he's getting paid that much, so I should get paid that much. That's what they do in professional baseball and things like that. It should be a little bit different in a university, I wouldn't think.
Chris, you want to jump in?
Well, these aren't professional baseball salaries, obviously. The state is completely responsible for the composition of the Board of Regents. And all that has to happen if we don't want it to be packed with corporate executives and hedge fund operators is for the Senate to exercise its right to essentially reject the nominations of the governor. The governor wants this to be a simple populist university, and yet he renewed Dick Blum to a third term. So the state is part of the action here, and it needs to take responsibility as well.
Kevin?
I agree.
I just want to chime in that the students have already been talking about the lack of quality in Regents. The students have already been talking about how ironic it is that Governor Brown, is so upset with the Regents. Back in late August or early September, the UCSA leadership traveled to Sacramento. We went to the Senate Rules Committee. We told the Senate Rules Committee the four Regents that were there was Regent Blum, our favorite, Regent Lozano, Regent Sherman, and I think Regent Patiz, the four of them. We told them to reject these individuals. All of these individuals had a history on the Regents. They had difficult histories on the Regents. They were out of touch with California. We had concerns about their diversity, economically, socially, any other way that you can use the term diversity. We told them that they should reject that. These individuals, I think Richard Blum donated a few $10,000-something dollars to Governor Brown's reelection campaign. I know another one donated about $15,000, and another one donated $7,000. These individuals are contributing to getting this governor elected to office. That governor is appointing these individuals, maybe, as a favor to thank them for his reelection, appointing these individuals to the Regents, where they then go to the Regents meetings and they sit there and yell at each other about all of these poor decision-making that happens. I mean, students have been there even before all of these conversations about the lack of quality in Regents and the issues with the governor. We have been talking about this forever, and now people are finally starting to take issue with it.
Right. The students have been very, very active in trying to raise awareness about the Regents process, which if you're not really connected to the UC system, you probably don't really know much about what goes on behind the scenes.
Right.
So since you have been involved and you go to these meetings, what do you want us to know?
Well, first of all, our concern is that in Article 9, Section 9, Subsection E of the state constitution, and I have it memorized at this point, because we've raised this issue enough with the governor's appointment secretary in his office, says that there is supposed to be a nominating committee where these individuals, it includes students, it includes faculty and staff and members of the public and members of the legislature through the Senate Rules Committee and the speaker's appointments, these individuals are supposed to get together, vet candidates, and submit candidates to the governor, and he's supposed to select from this list. And since at least Governor Gray Davis that we've been able to determine, so all the current regents, since it was over 12 years ago, each of those candidates have been appointed outside of this process. That committee hasn't even been constituted. There have been no people appointed to it, even though you can go to the governor's office's website and you can apply to be appointed to the selection committee for regents. No one's been appointed to the selection committee, and the governor is appointing whoever pops into his head, most recently his former legislative secretary, to the regents, and there is no opportunity for anyone else outside of the governor to participate in selecting that. And I think that's reflective in this committee of two. Why is it that President Napolitano and Governor Brown, as if they're the only two individuals who are affected by this, affected by the UC budget, there are no members of the public outside of the governor, there are no students, the people who are being most affected by this, there are no faculty, there are no staff, there's no one who's being included in this committee that is supposed to oversee the finances.
And according to reports, media will also not be allowed at these meetings.
Exactly. And the media plays an important role as the watchdog. And so who is, you know, these private fireside chats between Napolitano and Brown, what do we really expect to come out of this? They have two very large personalities. I've called it Clash of the Titans before in op-eds that I've written. What do we really expect to come out of this? It's a, you know, pony show.
So it's the two of them alone in a room.
Absolutely.
No regents, no students, no one.
Having coffee, chatting about the UC's budget.
Now, so the regents, you talked about that. What about politicians? I know that the students go to Sacramento on a regular basis. What are your thoughts, for example, about California Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins' plan to publicly scrutinize the UC's budget line by line?
Well, you know, we don't know how feasible it is, the zero-based budgeting. We've talked about, you know, how realistic that is to pan out. But, you know, we do think that there needs to be a broad coalition of multiple stakeholders who are reviewing the UC's expenditure. So if we can start with this conversation about zero-based budgeting, as unfeasible as I've been told it is, then maybe that's a starting point. But we need to really hold the president of the UC and the governor of California accountable and tell them to open the doors, that this is everyone's university, that the public contributed, the students contributed, all these alumni who are contributing more than Harvard apparently, that everyone has a stake in this institution. And as such, we should have a direct view into the budget.
And what are students calling for at this point?
So we passed a vote of no confidence in the president and the regents of the UC at our meeting on January 10th and 11th, and had three demands, the first being to repeal the tuition plan, as it claims it's, you know, to bring stability in middle-class families. There's nothing stable about the budget being passed in June and solidifying tuition, and then August, our semester starting, and then having to figure out in the span of 2 months how we're going to come up with potentially a $2,000 difference. So the repeal of the plan, with all of its issues included, being the implementation of AB 970, which is this statute that passed, I believe, in 2013, saying that students are going to be consulted whenever tuition increases happen, that in order for a tuition increase to happen, that there be a series of conditions, including that there are no other revenue opportunities, that we've looked at everything else and a few other things. So full implementation of that, which has been on hiatus for a while now, in terms of being enacted. And then lastly, that this committee of two being opened up to include other stakeholders. So those are the three demands of the students right now.
And Chris, in your recent piece, you write that families also really need to get organized. You say at this point they're poorly organized and have not held politicians accountable for their destructive cuts.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I agree with the transparency agenda completely, and I think that Kevin's just outlined some very good steps. I don't agree with zero-based budgeting, just sending, you know, things back to zero and sort of building from there. I mean, it's just we're trying to move the public side of the budget in another direction. The parents are a crucial element here because they're not only shouldering more costs, but they're also shouldering more of a subject we haven't talked about yet, which is student debt. Some of it is just being pushed into parent plus loans, and the total family debt is actually significantly higher than what's attributed just to students, which is already outrageous. What I would like to see is transparency and then the reset, moving tuition and back down and state funding back up to where it was when the university was still functioning pretty well in just 14 or 15 years ago, 2000 to 2001. We need to do the transparency first so the state has confidence in how the university is spending its money. But the real goal, and I think students should get behind this, is to lower costs, lower borrowing, lower debt, increase funding for, you know, classroom instruction, for research, so that the whole thing can start moving back ahead into the 21st century again.
And just quickly, you mentioned reset, and Rob has a question. Can you discuss the amount of taxpayer money that would be required to return UC tuition to what it was in 1965, well, free, right? So quickly, I understand that members of the California faculty have published several papers outlining funding schemes, and it would cost about $50 per taxpayer.
Right, to get it halfway back to free. So you basically cut a tuition for UC back to about $5,000, and that's $6.9 billion for both segments, including Cal State, which sounds like a lot of money, but if you divide it by our huge population, it's $50 a year per median tax.
Wow.
And it's about $7 a year for lower-income people. Making $150,000, it's about $300 a year.
Wow. So 38 million people live in California, about $50 a year. That's what it would cost. We've got to do a show about that. Dan, we have about a minute left. Where do you see this going? Governor Brown and UC President Napolitano are going to meet over the next couple of months.
I think, like most political skirmishes, this one will resolve itself in some sort of face-saving compromise. Maybe they'll make some sort of promises to do better on the things that Jerry Brown wants them to do better on, and he'll give them some money, and they'll all kind of link hands, sing kumbaya, and put it off for another year, basically. I don't think this is going to come to some cataclysmic conclusion in which, you know, somebody declares victory and somebody declares a loss and commits harikari or something like that. It ain't going to happen that way. It's going to probably be some sort of a, like I say, face-saving compromise that will never get to the fundamentals of the issue, and it'll just buy them some time for another year, and they'll come back and diddle with it next year.
All right. Well, we will talk more about this reset plan and creative ways to fund higher education in California. Dan Walters is a veteran journalist with the Sacramento Bee. Kevin Sabo is board chair of the UC Student Association and political science major at UC Berkeley. Chris Newfield is professor of literature at UC Santa Barbara and author of Unmaking the Public University. Thank you all for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll talk about coverage of Jeffrey Sterling, the CIA whistleblower who was convicted of espionage for giving the New York Times' James Risen classified information about Iran's nuclear program. We'll also discuss the historic election in Greece and the rise of the anti-austerity party Syriza. We'll be joined by Harper Scott Horton and the Globe and Mail's Eric Reguli. What grabbed your attention in the media this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.